you know, like obviously what people wanted was to see me fail, most of all. That's what I reckon. Mm. They just want to see me fail. And yeah, like you said, first of all, like don't give them that satisfaction. And realistically, who are they to decide if I'm going to do a sport or not? Like, who are they to question my journey or question, you know, my hard work?
Boxer Lynn Sandstrom is one of the most determined individuals you will meet. Currently ranked 9th by the WBA and having won 3 straight title fights, the most recent being the WBA Intercontinental title won in October last year, she is on a mission to never be mediocre or average. Those are her words. Born in Brazil, raised in Sweden, and now living in Australia, Sandstrom's journey into boxing is a unique one. She came into the sport late, as she was a professional table tennis player, winning Swedish titles along the way. But due to the lack of opportunities on offer, she left the sport before finding her new path into boxing. This is where Sandstrom the fighter really comes into her own. While her exploits in the ring are attracting plenty of attention, there have been many doubters along the way, asking who this former pro table tennis player is. But outside of the ring, Sandstrom is fighting even harder to prove those doubters wrong. For her, she's on a mission to become a world champion, and that hunger is so evident in this interview. Rest assured you'll be hearing a lot about her in the future, and if hard work is rewarded as it should be, then that dream could well become a reality. Lynn, a very, very warm welcome to the podcast. And thanks so much for taking the time out to chat with us today and being our guest, finding out all about yourself, finding out all about your sport. How is everything with you ultimately? Because what we're recording at the end of November, but it's been a busy year for you.
Yeah, it's been a massive year. Look, I've had 6 fights in, I think, 4 or 5 different countries. And I've also traveled all over the world with boxing. So yeah, it's been a very busy year, but I wouldn't change any of it.
Definitely. Certainly racking up the air miles anyway, like you say, hopping from country to country. Sure. Shall we start then on those really, really high notes, I suppose? Because you've essentially won 3 straight title fights. There's no way of saying that's really, really impressive. So huge congratulations to you. For those listening, that's what the WBC Australasia title, the WBA Asia title, and now most recently when you fought in the WBA Intercontinental title. Like I say, that's 6 fights in this year in total, like you said, 1 all 6. How do you kind of feel about sort of the year, but I suppose how you feel like you've developed as a boxer over the last 12 months as well?
Look, I feel obviously my development has been huge. In the beginning of the year, we decided to do, we call it like a world camp, training camp, fight camp. So basically, I started off by fighting in Australia, coming off a really good win over there. And then like 2 days later, I flew to Philippines and fought there on my own. I didn't have my coach with me or nothing. So that was a very special experience for me. And then I went to Mexico and I did 1 week of training camp over there. And even when I was there, I didn't have my coach and it was very hard. You know, the Mexican girls are so tough. And I remember I got dropped in sparring from body shots and stuff. And then from Mexico, I went to Costa Rica and I got to fight there. And, you know, just fighting without having your coach in your corner. And even in Costa Rica, they couldn't speak English. None of the people in my corner could speak a word English and I can't speak Spanish. So basically I was in a corner where no one could talk to each other, you know. So I've definitely turned into a fighter this year, you know, going through all of that stuff with not having, you know, your support network there with you that you normally have. And then just growing as an athlete. I feel like my last fight in London, was the fight where I went in. It was so much pressure, but I was just so calm and cool and collected, and just went in and did my job. And I think all of what I've been through this year led me to that moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. As those, I suppose those experiences, as it kind of taught you to be a lot more independent in your decision making and things like that. And maybe that's why where the added confidence comes from.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm so happy I, you know, was able to do and have a massive year like this. So yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you got any particular highlights that really stand out for you on what's happened, or any particular, you know, moments that I suppose really you can be really proud of?
I think for me, when I knocked down my first goal was a really big thing. It was like, whoa, like a big moment. But also, I guess in general, like just like you said, like the growth that I've gone through, being able to really push through, you know, like in the beginning when I started boxing, I had a bit of a hard time. And now here I am and I don't care about anything or anyone, you know, I feel so in tune with myself and focused on what I want to do and what I want to achieve. So I feel in such a happy and good place, and I feel like this year has been a good reflection of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to sum up to people just how much work has actually gone into this as well. So I think, is it you train something like 15 times a week, which is ridiculous?
Yeah, no, I train full-time. I don't work. I'm, you know, full-time athlete. I train 2 or 3 times a day. And it's all that I do, you know, and I've done that now for several years. So a lot of time and effort and, you know, like even my team's effort, you know, that they put into me and the time as well. So yeah, it's a lot of, you know, people relying on you to do your job. And, but I feel like I'm growing each fight. I'm getting better and better. I'm learning more about the sport and turning into a better fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. And you alluded to kind of the hard times at the beginning of your boxing journey. And I suppose where you are now, can you kind of describe what the biggest difference is in yourself from when you first moved into boxing to, I suppose, the athlete that you are now?
I guess in the beginning, I wasn't used to people being so opinionated about you. So I wasn't used to having people, you know, talking shit about you, and especially behind your back, and, you know, thinking that you are not deserving on what you get, or, you know, why are people sponsoring her and why is she getting these opportunities? So I was not prepared for that. I've never experienced anything like that before. But now fast forward, you know, I've worked with mindset coaches for a couple of years now, and really built like a big resilience as well. And I'm actually happy, you know, I had to go through it, because I think it's helping me in the ring as well. You know, some of the things that I've had to experience and gone through, not a lot of people have, and it's really made me tough. So I'm grateful for that. You know, like I remember even telling my friends of some of the stuff that's happened, and they were saying like, why are you not quitting? Like we would be quitting like so long ago. But I just knew that I just had to keep showing up every day, putting in the work, no matter what, every day showing up. And now all of that work that I still put in, like that's now showing and giving results.
Yeah. Do you almost turn sort of those, like I say, those opinionated comments, whatever it may be, into fuel for yourself, ultimately, like fueling that fire?
I mean, in the beginning I did. Now it's like I couldn't care less, you know, like I'm ranked number 9 in the world. Like you said, I won 3 straight titles. I'm really, you know, doing well for myself. You know, I have great sponsors. So now I couldn't care less. But before it was like almost like I wanted to prove people wrong and stuff like that. And of course, it's a good fire in your belly, but it's not why I do it anymore. You know, I'm doing this for me and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I suppose that must put you in ultimately a better place than maybe where you were at the start as well, when you're happy within yourself and you're doing it you rather than anything else.
No, for sure. It's a much better feeling, but you got to be strong, you know, you got to be tough. It's not for everyone. Like, I think a lot of people would have quit a long time ago, like I said, but I'm so happy I didn't quit, because then I wouldn't know how far I can go in this sport. And I guess I'm about to find out.
I suppose it's kind of a hypothetical thing, but is there a reason you didn't quit? Is it what was it that just kept you so focused that you were going to make it?
I think that, you know, like obviously what people wanted was to see me fail, most of all. That's what I reckon. They just want to see me fail. And yeah, like you said, first of all, like don't give them that satisfaction. And realistically, who are they to decide if I'm going to do a sport or not? Like, who are they to question my journey or question, you know, my hard work when they are not willing themselves to put in the same amount of training or, you know, like same amount of sacrifices that I'm doing? You know, I'm living on the other side of the world, away from my family, you know, my friends, everything. And I'm here on my own, just trying to do the best that I can to reach my goals.
Absolutely. And it sums up this brilliant mantra that you've got. You never want to be mediocre or average. Has that drive kind of always been there? Does that come up from, I suppose, the way you were raised, that kind of thing?
Not the way that I was raised, but I think because in Sweden, like, everyone should be like the same. So you don't want to stand out. You don't want to say you want to be a world champion and stuff. But I think maybe that's the Brazilian in me, you know, like I've always been such a competitive person and I've always loved doing things that other wouldn't, and that other wouldn't think that I could possibly do. That's really satisfying to me. So when, you know, I was told that I would never make it as a boxer, and when I was told, you know, like I couldn't do it, then yeah, that was the start of it. And I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to prove you wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going that way as well. And then, I mean, I was kind of going to ask, have you always been confident in your own ability? And I suppose that has, you know, from your previous answers, that's kind of come more and more, obviously, as you've grown in the sport and things like that. But then is there just, I suppose that, like I say, that Brazilian in you, that inner drive to really achieve something. And like I say, and I don't know if that's just from seeing other sports people or other role models and things like that, where that's really, really kind of, again, lit that fire in your belly, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it's just something you've got to have inside of you, you know, like, because also I was an athlete back in Sweden. I used to be a professional table tennis player. So in that sense, I'm raised kind of being an athlete and, you know, like seeing hard work paying off. But even here in Australia, you know, I've seen a lot of people where people would say like, oh, that person is going to be a world champion, just watch, you know, then train, blah, blah, blah. But I could tell straight away, like, that person himself or herself doesn't want it. Like, you got to want it so badly that you are willing to sacrifice like everything, you know? And if you don't have it inside of you, like the fight inside of you, you shouldn't have a trainer telling you to go and train. You shouldn't have a trainer telling you what to do, or, you know, like telling you, you know, like even like, oh, if you take this fight, you're not getting paid. Oh, but I'm not going to do it if I'm not getting paid. No, it's not about that. You got to look to your progress and, you know, like your journey, and you got to do a lot of sacrifices. But if you don't have that in your heart, I don't think you will make it to the top.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's, I remember when Hannah Rankin was on this podcast, she's a fellow boxer as well, and same sort of thing
in London.
Exactly. She is great, and
yeah,
I say just the drive and the determination, because first met her years ago and then spoke to her just before our most recent fight, and just the difference in her confidence in that time. I think it's very similar to kind of what you're talking about, you know, as time goes on, you can believe in yourself, that really, really grows. And you speak of sacrifices there, and obviously you've already alluded to it, living in Australia, far away from friends, far away from where you were raised. How has that been, kind of settling into a new life, a new country at the same time? And I suppose, you know, getting used to the fact that you are really, really dedicated to your sport, but a lot of those who are closest to you aren't physically closest to you right now.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, in the beginning, I didn't have that many close friends, but now I've managed to get a group of girls where, you know, they're all super supportive. We all support each other in what we do, which is great. But it's hard, you know, like normally in the fight business, you know, you got to sell tickets, for example, to have people come and watch you fight. Yeah, well, I don't have my family and friends here. Lucky I've never been on a show where I've had to sell any tickets because I wouldn't be able to. So that kind of worked out the way I guess it was supposed to. But I mean, things like that, if I was going to have to sell tickets in the beginning, you know, I didn't have that support network here. And even, you know, like I see other people, you know, they have their uncles, their dads, their moms, their sisters, all of those people are there supporting them through fight nights. You know, they're helping you with all of these things that you might need help for before you fight. But, you know, I just got me relying on myself. And then obviously I have a great coach as well who kind of becomes like a family because I don't have my real family here, you know, like in that sense.
Yeah. And have you ended up kind of, like I say, with your sporting family, I suppose, building up something akin to a support network now?
Yeah. Yeah. Now I have the best team around me. And I guess that's something, you know, like if you want to be a world champion or striving to be a world champion, you know, I've learned that you got to surround yourself with those type of people that, you know, like fits within what you want to do and, you know, understands, like I said, again, that all the sacrifices that you are doing, you know, I can't be out partying every night. I can't go to dinners when I'm cutting weight, you know, it's so much that I can't do. I can't be out late. But you just got to find those people that, you know, support you in what you do and you make sure you support them back in whatever they choose to do, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel settled as well now that, I suppose, does it feel like home?
Yeah, I feel good now. I actually just got a small puppy as well.
That definitely helped.
To the family. Yeah, so he's beautiful. But in the beginning, I was like, can I really do this? Because I don't wanna have it interfering with, you know, my goals or with me being able to travel. Because I still want to travel. I still want to, you know, challenge the best and do fight camps overseas and stuff. But I think that I found a good solution now and it's the best decision I've made.
Yeah, definitely. And if anything's going to take your mind off of boxing for a little bit, it is a small puppy.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you're finding out.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful.
Absolutely. And obviously you've mentioned it's there as well documented that before you transitioned into boxing, you were playing professional table tennis in Sweden. I mean, how did that come about, sort of your entry into table tennis in the first place?
Yeah, no, it's a bit random. Like, Australian people think it's random, but in Sweden, it's actually a very big sport. We have some really good table tennis players over there. So basically, I did like a school competition when I was like 12. So then it went really well. And my dad was like, shouldn't you start playing table tennis? And I remember when I started when I was 12 or 13. And by the age of 12 in table tennis, you are normally already established in like the junior national team and stuff. So people told me straight away, like, no, you're not going to make it. Like, you're too old to start doing this sport. And then I had this beautiful coach. He took me in and he said, look, I'm going to train you for a whole summer. Like, this is the most important note in your life. And so just you and me, one-on-one, a whole summer. And I remember us doing that, and from that I was like ranked top four in the juniors, and just like really I basically worked harder than everyone else. I said to myself, you know, I'm gonna be the first one in the gym and the last one to leave, and that's what I did, and climbed the rankings. I went to elite sports school where I got to play table tennis during school, and it was like table tennis, soccer, all of these sports where really good athletes went to. And when I graduated, I got an award for being the best athlete out of everyone of the school as well, and got a scholarship. I went to China training 6 hours a day for 6 weeks straight. And yeah, it was full on.
And to compare for a minute as well, it's you proving people wrong again in your mind that's kind of really driving you. And I suppose that's where you can compare that to your boxing experience. I suppose you can draw on that and what you went through before this time around as well, when you originally entered the sport.
Exactly. And people, I remember when I started boxing then, people were like, who is this girl? Where is she coming from? Because after I stopped playing table tennis, I started studying marketing. And so I have a bachelor in marketing. So I remember when I started boxing, I said to myself, you know what, I'm just going to document this journey. You know, I've been an athlete before, but I want to document every step, you know. So I started my Instagram, uploading videos. You know, if you scroll back, there's videos of my first ever session there where I'm like, absolutely crap. And it's just grown so much because people want to see that journey, you know. Like, most of my followers have been there since the start up until now, you know, seeing all the goods and the bads and the hard work and the improvements. So it's pretty cool that I did that. I'm happy I did that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say it gives people an opportunity to buy into your own journey as well. And a lot of people can relate to, you know, individual journeys and overcoming all sorts of things to actually get to where you want. And they find a lot of a source of inspiration in that as well. And then the move from table tennis to boxing, I think I saw in a previous interview that you'd done that it was primarily kind of financial things, and obviously the women's side of the sport in Sweden is not as well backed as what the men's side is.
Yeah, exactly. So I was a girl, obviously, playing table tennis, but the men in the same club got paid to play, but I had to pay to play. So it was like, no, I can't do this. I am at the same level. I am putting in the exact same amount of times and hours into this sport, but I have to pay my own money to be able to do this. So I decided, look, I can't do this anymore. But obviously, going from being an athlete and being almost like well known in the city where I was from, even though it was a small city, but, you know, people saw me in the papers because I was always competing every single weekend, you know, if not once, twice a week. And then to go and not being an athlete anymore, I kind of lost who I was. So I started gaining heaps of weight. And then, you know, we decided to move to Australia. So then when I saw that they were building the gym like 20 meters from where I'm staying, from my apartment, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to give it a go. So I gained weight, you know, I wasn't really that happy. So I was like walking into the gym and never looked back since.
Yeah. I mean, as has proved in the last, like I say, the last 12 months, and shows just where you've come from as well. And then I suppose, like you say, that period where you lose your identity, so to speak, were you conscious of trying to find another sport, or was it just trying to find something that would, I suppose, reignite that passion, that determination that you had before?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a lot about the journey as well. You know, the growth. I love learning. It's the best thing in the world, you know. So when I got the offer from the coach at Bondi, you know, to train with him every single day, I was like, are you serious? Like, I could not believe it, because I haven't seen him train barely any amateurs at that stage either. And I don't think he thought that I would take it so seriously, like that I was actually going to show up every single day. And if he wasn't there, I'm like, hello, where are you? Like, we're supposed to train, where are you? I want to learn. So I took it, you know, with both hands and ran with it.
Yeah. But you must have had something as well in those early days that he spotted and wanted to develop.
No,
too.
I mean, I think he saw that, you know, I really wanted it. And I think he saw, you know, that the potential of me being an athlete before. And so then when I first started fighting, I had my first amateur fights after 12 weeks already. And he put me in with girls that were 3 kilos heavier and heaps more experienced, but he didn't tell me. So when I stepped in the ring for my first three fights, they bashed me, absolutely bashed me. And I remember crying. But he's told me now afterwards, he just wanted to test my heart and see like if I really, really wanted this. And yeah, so then when he matched me up in my fourth fight with a girl, you know, my weight, same experience, then I went on to winning. And I remember like screaming like there was no tomorrow, hugging the referees, hugging the cameraman. People thought I won like the bloody world title. But yeah, it was like, I was so happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about as well the sort of the transferable nature of, you know, your early table tennis experience and your early boxing experience and proving people wrong and things like that. But like I say, being an athlete before, there must be transferable skills there, even though, you know, they're quite different sports, but a lot of that dedication that you picked up early on, I imagine you can use now as well and in your early part of your boxing journey too.
No, I think there is a lot of skills, you know, and I guess from the table tennis, they were training so serious, you know, taking everything really, really serious. Like you had to video all of your sessions, you know, like you were not allowed to party at all. So I'm taking a lot of that into boxing. Like when people told me like you have a fight and then you might have a break for 6 weeks and then you start training, and I was like, a break? What is a break? Like, I've never heard of a break before. And I think, you know, just quick feet, you know, like obviously being very athletic, like I would just say that I'm just a very athletic person in general. I learn quickly. I absorb everything. I spend so much hours. I remember even in the beginning when I moved to Australia, I worked at a fashion company, but I would just sit there and, you know, write down notes from training and like go over them, watch my training at the toilet. You know, I wanted nothing but boxing.
Yeah. And I'd kind of noticed this down before as well. With regards to your table tennis, and then obviously we pick up in a wider discussion as well later on about women's sport, but just as a highlight, I suppose, those inequalities that we sometimes forget still exist, because you look at, you know, where women's boxing is now and it's moving in such a positive trajectory. Over here, we watched our England women's football team win the European Championships in the summer, and there's so much positivity about where a lot of women's sport is going. But I suppose your experience with table tennis highlights that there's still quite a long way to go in some sports too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now it was a few years ago since I did play. So, you know, hopefully a lot have happened even in that sport. I mean, even since I started boxing now, a lot has happened. So I would hope the same has happened for them in table tennis for sure.
Yeah. Would you have considered staying if things were better, staying in table tennis?
I think I was pretty dumb, to be honest, because the training sessions in table tennis are like 3 hours per session. You got to do twice a day. It's very long. And in the end, I could find myself almost getting bored. You know, I've done it for 10 years. And I feel like I just needed something new. I was pretty much done. So when I started boxing and everything was new, and, you know, it's so much to learn and all of that, it was exciting. To keep doing it, to keep learning and keep doing that. Even now, I've played some few tournaments in table tennis. You know, I can do it in my sleep. I'm still good. But it doesn't excite me anymore.
Yeah. Is that, I don't know, is that almost a reflection of your personality at the same time, where you kind of are looking for a new challenge? Sometimes something new to really tackle?
Yeah, just something new. And when I do it, I want to be the best. So, like, if I didn't have that drive to be the best in table tennis anymore, so I wouldn't do it. Like, even when I was an amateur, you know, I already had heaps of sponsors in boxing. I already stopped working when I was an amateur. And back then, it wasn't really the norm, you know. Mm. So I said to myself, you know what, if I'm going to do this sport, I'm going to do it 100%. There's no, you know, middle. I got to do it properly.
Yeah, no half measures with it.
Yeah.
Sportspiel is proud to be partners with the Mintridge Foundation, founded in 2015 by Managing Director Alex Wallace. The charity is dedicated to enhancing life skills in young people through sport. They provide a support network for young people by harnessing the power of sporting role models and have several wonderful ambassadors, many of whom have been guests on this show. The Mintridge Foundation assists young people of all ages, abilities and physical capabilities to develop confidence and resilience and create awareness of the importance of mental and physical well-being through sport. Another wonderful example of just how powerful sport can be to everyone. To find out more, go to mintridgefoundation.org.uk, or you can find a link in the episode show notes. This is kind of a big question, but we touched on sort of, you know, your background and how you were raised earlier on. Can you kind of sum up how, I suppose, important sport was to you growing up. I suppose how sport has ultimately shaped you into the person who you are today.
No, I mean, sports, yeah, definitely played a huge part of who I am. You know, I've done so many different sports. You know, I played soccer in boys teams for 6 years, I think. You know, I played handball, floorball, I played athletics, you know, all of these stuff. But I was lucky. I had a super supportive family. You know, my dad drove me every single weekend to all of these tournaments around, you know, Sweden. You know, even if it was like 5, 6, 7 hours one way, he would drive me there to compete. So I remember that was another thing that shocked me a bit in boxing. People were like, oh no, I'm not gonna go to that tournament, it's like an hour drive there. I'm like, an hour drive, like, that's nothing. So I'm used to having that support, and it really shaped who I am. You know, like I said, I love challenges, I love the journey, I love, you know, the ups and downs. I love everything about it, everything.
Yeah, like I say, all about the journey. And then on that journey as well, is there one thing that you can kind of pinpoint as, I suppose, the biggest learning for yourself?
I think that, yeah, never give up, you know. Don't let anyone tell you what you can and can't do. It sounds so cringe, but it's so true at the same time. Like, it's really true. You know, you can do whatever you want. You just got to work super hard, you know, like really work hard. You can't think that, oh, I'm just going to go to training today, or, oh, no, I'm just going to stay at home and rest. No, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, if I had the amount of people when I was growing up and who said I would never have been a journalist, and I managed it. It's no way an elite sport or anything, but like I say, I think everyone's got their own little personal journey where they can kind of look back and see where they were and when they've got to and where they may go in the future as well. So yeah, definitely very similar for yourself. Another big question, but you kind of mentioned about doing things for yourself, but what drives you? Is it just doing that thing for yourself and trying to better yourself and all about that journey?
Yeah, that's it. You know, like even now, for example, when we went to London, you know, we flew business class there, which is like, I've never done that before. You know, or just all of the experience that you know, get to experience through boxing. And the fact now that because I've done my social media really well, it's almost like my CV. And so when I met up with all of these world champions around the world and connecting here and there, I can travel to almost whatever gym I want and be accepted, because then they can see, you know, I'm a boxer, I'm not bullshit. And you can meet so many new people and create so many new friends. And I'm really doing this for me because I just love it and I just want to be the best.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, you're touching on social media there, and I noticed some points down about that as well. And like I say, you've got a big, big following now. A lot of people who followed you on this entire journey. I think it's what, you've got over 55,000 on Instagram, for example, following you. Does that come naturally to you, I suppose, when you first set up those social media accounts and how you manage them now? Because, you know, speaking to different athletes, it differs from person to person whether you can get, where it can be too much and social media kind of dominates your life, and whether you've had to kind of manage that at the same time as trying to promote yourself where possible.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, it's been super easy. It's always just been about documenting my journey, you know, sharing some of my training. Nothing is really staged or, you know, like pretended. And also, I think people really like that. You know, they like the real content that I'm putting out there. And it just, a lot of it just tends to go viral. I actually don't spend a lot of time on social media at all. People think like, oh my God, like, shouldn't she be training instead of being on social media? Well, being on social media and putting up a video takes me 3 minutes and then I'm done. Maybe for other people it takes like hours, but I'm pretty good at what I'm doing. I feel like I have an eye for what I'm doing. And like I said, I have a bachelor in marketing. So I feel like I've really used that to my advantage as well when it comes to, you know, representing brands and the way that I'm presenting myself as well. I actually had a really interesting meeting the other day, last week, with a big company. And the CEO said to me, look, we obviously had a lot of girls approaching us And one of the girls, I've been following her, like I've been following you on social media. And then I was looking at her story, and she started talking shit about people, other girls in the industry. And it's so common, you know, that people do that. And they don't think about the consequences, or don't think about, you know, how that affects other people. So something I'm prouding myself in is that, you know, I'm just not that person, and it's not what I'm about. But even the big companies are looking at you in mm-hmm. that sort of way as well.
Yeah, like, and like you say, it's one of those complicated relationships that a lot of people can have with social media, and how it can be that kind of place where people are digging each other out. But in your case, it's one of those places where, you know, if you put out positivity, then it can have such a great effect on people who are seeing it. And one word you used before about making it real, is that important as well, that it is, it's ultimately real stuff, the good, the bad, all of it, rather than this glossed over, you know, perfect image, if you like.
Now, for me, it is, yeah, because like I said, it's been about documenting my journey, you know, like I'm not have anything to hide, you know, I want to share everything. And I remember, like, even one of the losses that I have, that wasn't actually a loss, I actually won that fight, but got robbed. And I remember the whole venue, you know, everyone coming up to me and giving me so much love, so much support after the fight, even on social media. And, you know, like, if you just are real and true, the support is still there, if that makes sense. And and the amount of messages that I've got, you know, saying like, oh my God, you are inspiring my daughter so much. She's talking about you in school as a role model. You know, like I remember teaching club kids back at the gym before, and they said that they were going to have presentations about me. And, you know, even men, women, everyone is just following this journey, and they've been so inspired by it. And it's a cool thing, you know?
Yeah, definitely a cool thing. And is it a little bit weird to get your head around as well, being a role model to a lot of people?
In the beginning, yeah. In the beginning, I said to my coach, I'm like, oh my God, look at this message. Like, they're actually messaging me this stuff and telling me, like, it's not like one word. It's like a full-on, like, message. And it wasn't like one or two. It's like hundreds. So in the beginning, I'm like, I don't know what to do about this. But I think now I feel more kind of proud. You know,
yeah.
Like, this is cool. I'm actually, you know, maybe changing someone's life, or, you know, like getting someone to get out of the couch and start training, or whatever it might be, you know, like can relate to my story. It's pretty cool.
Exactly. When you actually process what it means, and, you know, yeah, the impact that you're having on people, definitely must make it. And it's, like I say, a really, really cool thing.
Yeah.
Who are your role models?
I don't know, to be honest. It sounds very rude. I obviously have a lot of boxes that I think are good boxes, but I don't really have any role models in that sense, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, it sums up, because obviously we've spoken to a lot of athletes, and obviously the answers differ when you occasionally fire out that question. And one thing I kind of point to, and again, it's a little bit of the women's sport side, but how you've become a role model for other people, other girls who are, you know, seeing what you're doing. And it always makes me think, is that just a sign of where we've progressed? And maybe, you know, when you were growing up, there just wasn't that same female role model for you. And now you get to be that role model for others, if that makes sense. And I don't know if you feel like, you know, going back to when you were younger, would it have helped if you'd had someone like that to look up to? I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't ever think I've actually had a role model in that sense, you know. I know how I don't want to be when I see some people acting a certain way, you know. Like, I know my values. I know the kind of person I want to be. And like I said, obviously I have heaps of boxes that I look up to, their skills and stuff like that. But I don't really have a person that I feel like, wow, I want to be that person. I want to be like her. But obviously a lot of people inspire me. But not in that way that I would say like, wow, they are my role model.
Yeah. But like I say, the values that you can hold kind of true to yourself and live your life by, then they're definitely important, aren't they? And yeah. I've touched on this as well. Like, women's boxing seems to be progressing into such a good place at the moment. Mentioned Hannah Rankin before, but people like Katie Taylor, Clarissa Shields, Savannah Marshall, Terry Harper, the list goes on quite extensively now. You know, there's a lot of names who are really, really doing great, great things in the sport. Does it kind of feel like that to you as well, as someone in the sport now, that there's kind of that real wave? And I suppose coming to London as well and seeing the support that there is out there for women's boxing.
No, London was an eye-opener, you know, like, they really love their boxing. Like, we were taking so many taxis and stuff, and everyone knew boxing. It didn't matter who you were talking to, everyone knew boxing. So it was such a cool thing, you know, and they were saying that, you know, wait until we come to your call, like, the atmosphere, you got to feel the atmosphere. And they're right, you know, it's different.
Yeah. And in what way do you kind of pick up that? Is it just that enthusiasm? Is that kind of the main difference there?
Yeah, I guess the enthusiasm, you know, like, I had people in the crowd that was there to watch me. Like, even though I'm based in Australia, they are coming from London, you know, obviously following me on social media. They bought tickets, you know, came to support me. I had people staying at the hotel where I was staying coming to support me that I didn't even know about. I think, yeah, it's just the way they love their boxing. I mean, the girls in the O2s, when Clarissa Shields fought Savannah Marshall, they sold out, I think, was it 20,000 or something like that?
Yeah, Pete sold out.
Yeah.
Considering that was a reorganized fight as well. It was postponed for the Queen's death, if memory serves me right. But like I say, it does showcase just the passion that there is for it in this country. Is it?
Yeah.
Obviously, like I say, you've jet-setted around a lot this year. Is it a similar story in other countries? Maybe not quite that level, but at least you can see the enjoyment of the sport and the passion for the sport is still there in pockets.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved going to the States when I've done camps over there. I feel like they are just hustlers, you know. Like, they, I remember even the first time I was there, wasn't last year, it was a couple of years before that, and I went to Fortune's gym, and I remember sitting outside the gym after a session, and there was some of the fighters there, and Justin was there, and they were just, the stories they were telling, and, you know, like, the way they were talking about it and how hard they trained and all of that, like, it was really an eye-opener, and it was just such a cool experience, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Is there much more? I suppose it's always a million-dollar question a lot of the time, but in terms of taking those next steps forward, is there anything that you can kind of see from your perspective that would help that journey for boxing, I suppose, for women's boxing, to get even bigger, to get even more of more showcasing, things like that?
No, I mean, like, obviously social media is huge just as at this stage, you know. Social media can help you sell tickets, social media can help you promote fights. So I think, like, a lot of people should get on social media, to be honest, because that's how we're going to get more eyes on the sport, more eyes wanting to watch you fight, you know. And I mean, like, 99.99% of the comments that I get on my social media is all positive. Like, there is no negative vibes. There is no one hating on me, you know. And I have, yeah, like you said, close to 60,000 followers there now. And it's all positive. People want to watch me fight, want to watch me box and support what I'm doing.
Yeah. And like I say, it's a lot of what you put in to stuff, you get back out. So if you're putting positive energy into social media, then I suppose it's very likely that you're going to get positive energy coming back at you as well. I suppose in terms of, like, looking ahead to your 2023, and we spoke a little bit about before we started recording about, you know, how is that going to look for you? What kind of, do you go about setting yourself targets? Do you go about setting yourself aims? Or is it just, so long as you're moving in a positive trajectory, that's a good thing without setting any, you know, deliberate targets, if that makes sense?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, obviously I want bigger, better fights. Obviously the ultimate goal is to become a world champion, so I would love to do that. I want to continue traveling overseas to spar, you know, better girls and girls from overseas, because I feel like they have a different power. They have a different strength about them that some, like, you don't get that here in Australia. It's different, you know. So I want to keep developing, keep getting better, and like I said, hopefully one day become a world champion.
Yeah, and is that the, I suppose, the ultimate aim, really?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I would like to say it'd be really, really great to see that happen. And like I say, putting the amount of work that you put into it, as we found out, I'm sure that will come your way as well. It's the hustling side of things, isn't it? Like you were saying, like it really, really pays off. I was going to mention as well, but you did drop in that you're a Manchester United fan beforehand, which, if anything, is going to teach you a lesson on the highs and lows of sport, then it's supporting Manchester United, I imagine.
Yeah, it's me and my brother. It's his favourite team as well.
He's the one to blame.
Yeah, he's the one to blame. And my coach.
Oh, I mean, someone's got to, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, definitely. My final thing then, kind of, obviously we're big supporters of women as a sport on this show. We bang on about it quite a lot, and it's one of those things where, you know, there's no point shouting about women in sport and women's sport getting better coverage if you're not doing something about it. It's one of the reasons why it exists. I suppose from your perspective, I mean, what would you say it is that, you know, that can sum up why it's so important to showcase that, so important to introduce young girls to sport, for example, and what it can ultimately do for people just to see it and do it?
No, I mean, like boxing, like they say, it can change people's lives. You know, like boxing is a very forgiving sport. You know, everyone is welcome to boxing gyms. You know, you walk in the gym and you put your differences aside and you just go in there, hit the bags, you know, like it can turn a bad day into a good day and all of that things. And I just feel like, you know, like even in the gyms, like the girls go as hard as the boys, you know, like if we go into sparring, it's wars, and we get into a point where you can't really tell if it's a girl or a boy in there sparring. We're just getting to a really good level, so you know, everyone should just support that and support both men and women in sport. Like, it's good.
Yeah, like you say, people on both sides put the effort in, and it's one of those things where I think you can support either side because they're working just as hard as each other to really, at the end of the day, put on a show for fans ultimately.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lynn, for coming onto the show. Like I say,
thank you so much
always thankful when people take the time out to chat to us. Covered a lot of different things there, but I think it really gives an insight into, I suppose, A, those transferable skills that you can have from one sport to another, but what people will ultimately have taken away from this, I think, is just the amount of work you do put in to being the best version of yourself. And I think there's a lot of credit in that. And again, no wonder that you get those messages saying that you are a role model, because I think people, whether you're a professional athlete or not, can take a lot of inspiration from doing something to the best of your ability, regardless of what it is. So thank you so much for coming on, and we wish you all the very best once 2023 comes around, and look forward to seeing that world championship title fight, I'm sure, in the near future.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
A huge thank you to Lynn for appearing as our guest on this episode of Sportspiel. I'm sure everyone will agree just how compelling a personality she is, and is able to be the personification of hard work and dedication. No doubt we'll be keeping an eye on everything she does next as she continues her boxing journey. Thank you, as ever, listeners, for tuning into the podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please spread the word, as how other people find us. And do give us a follow on our social platforms. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and we're on Twitter. All of our handles are at SportspielPod. We also have a newsletter, so you can get all the latest releases and updates into your inbox. The sign-up link is in the show notes of the episode. And if you want to get in touch with us, our email is sportspielpod@gmail.com. That's it for this episode, everyone. Tune in next week for another of our feature interviews. We will see you then.